You're listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G, sponsored by California. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
I'm your buddy, Mike the Ghoul. Gonna go put some bananas in tailpipes for a little bit, I think, right?
The new Beverly Hills Cop movie is out, although we are not particularly going to be touching upon the new one because one of the two of us hasn't seen it yet.
I'm sorry, school's busy.
But we can go back and touch upon the first three, because the first three fit into a weird, for me, a weird kind of zone where they're proto-Lethal Weapons, proto-diehards, because you can kind of see the progression from Beverly Hills Cop into Lethal Weapon into Die Hard, and then Die Hard is the one that really defined that action cop genre for, like, the next decade.
Right, right, right.
You don't talk about movies that are like Lethal Weapon, but, or like Beverly Hills Cop, but you basically have, like, Axel Foley come into a place, has to work on his own, even though the cops are working against him, has to take on terrorists. Like, if you swapped out him for John McClane, would the movie be any different?
It's a lot of the same, maybe a little more comedic timing with the Eddie Murphy being a comedian thing in the Beverly Hills Cops movies. But, I mean, the first one has some comedy, but definitely has, like, the same kind of grimy comedy that the first Die Hard had. They were very similar, and they were serious, but a little bit of funny in there. Beverly Hills Cop, a little bit more funny, but you get what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like you said, the corner turns, and the second one was much more comedy.
Yeah.
Than the first one. And then the third one didn't kind of really know where it wanted to go. Mm-hmm. It was very serious at times, you know, with
very bad at times.
Yeah, and that too. And, you know, with his superior officer getting killed in the beginning, like, that guy was a part of the story the whole time along the way.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was serious. But then, you know, it's set in an amusement park.
Yeah.
not the most serious of 10 years.
Well, and that's the thing that I think makes most of these movies hit better is, and we're talking about all of these at this point, from Beverly Hills Cop to Lethal Weapon to Die Hard, you care the most about what the hero is doing when he has a personal stake in the proceedings. The first two Beverly Hills Cops, like, Axel's going to Beverly Hills to track down someone who's wronged a friend of his, or killed someone he knew, or something like that. The third one, he goes there because reasons? Like, he needs to save the proprietor of a theme park because reasons, and he don't even really care about the guy.
I'm pretty sure it was, like, the daughter was someone that he was friends with, and, you know, her father, like, come help me out kind of thing.
It was,
like,
very tenuous.
Yeah, it wasn't like, I'm going there for a purpose. It's like, I'm going there for a favor.
I'm going there because apparently Beverly Hills Police Department falls apart without this one dude from Detroit.
Yeah.
And then, like, when you look at it, like, so, like, the best of Lethal Weapons were the ones where, like, Murtaugh's daughter was kidnapped or something like that. Or, like, Riggs is put into serious personal trouble. Like, something of those natures. And then every diehard basically says, oh, Holly's in trouble. We have to have him save her or his daughter or his son or something. And some of those were really bad because it's just stupid. But, like, how many times can this one family fall into trouble is what I'm saying.
There's a lot of tragedy that follows them around.
A lot of fucking terrorists going, man, you know, this one McClane guy. But the best ones were the ones where there was actually real tension about whether or not he was going to save someone he cared about. That's why he was involved. Like, think about it this way. If John McClane had just randomly shown up at Nakatomi Plaza and no one was there that he actually gave a shit about, do you think that down-his-luck cop would have stuck around to fight the terrorists?
No. And why else would he be there?
Yeah. No, he might have been invited by a friend, showed up for 5 minutes, went to the bathroom, terrorist showed up, and he's like, deuces, I'm out. I'll let the real cops handle this because I don't have a personal stake in the proceedings. They're going to do a better job than I will.
Yeah, one more thing, but, you know, I think there's something, I mean, I'm noticing a theme here now that I'm thinking about it. New York cop coming to L.A.
Right.
Detroit cop coming out to Beverly Hills. Right. Like, is there something wrong with the California justice system we should be talking about here?
Well, that's even Riggs, if you want to look at it, because he wasn't an L.A. guy. He was, like, a soldier from, like, overseas who came in afterwards. I think his, like, eventually they fleshed out his backstory and he's from Texas or something. So, like, and all three times, he's not from the local area, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I, It's a formula, and like you said, and it works in a lot of circumstances. And there's some good movies in there. You know, Die Hard 1 is probably one of the best action Christmas movies I've ever seen in my life, if not the best. And you do get some callback in there, to your point. Like, you know, Hans is the villain in the first one. His brother comes back to get revenge in the third one, which is kind of cool. And it's Jeremy Irons, so, like, I'm in. Like, you know, I'll watch anything that guy does.
Yeah.
You know, and but in this new Axel Foley one, I haven't seen it yet. I'm excited to, but the Beverly Hills Cop, like one and two, like we said, had a purpose. The third one was like, he didn't have a compelling villain for me here. It was a guy doing counterfeit shit and killed people because they were in his way. I mean, that could be anywhere. Why has it got to be Beverly Hills?
I mean, why has it got to be Beverly Hills? That is actually a compelling question to ask, is because it's always Beverly Hills Cop, but Beverly Hills is just a small section of L.A. Wouldn't you really think it's L.A. Cop with how much crime is going on there? Like, they gotta travel around. They got they're going to Hollywood and other things, but we only ever think of it as Beverly Hills Cop, and he only ever deals with the BVPD, which is a little silly.
Yeah, it and you would think, like, the people in the Beverly Hills Police Department shouldn't come across the kind of crime that Axel's over there to help kind of thwart.
Yeah.
There'd be a lot of white-collar crime going on. And maybe that's why the third one sucks so bad, because, I mean, counterfeit is kind of like a white-collar crime compared to murder. I mean, I don't know.
Well, and this raises a very valid point of how many times can a crime start in Detroit and then end up in L.A.?
Cursed, right?
Especially when you consider how far Detroit is from L.A. If you're going to go to a big city because you want to take whatever you're doing in Detroit and ship it out, the natural place to go is fucking New York.
Right, right. And you're in the middle of the country, or even Chicago or Florida or Texas, to your point. But no, we're going to go to Beverly Hills. We're going to hide amongst the money or something. I don't know.
That's just it doesn't make anywhere near as much sense as the movies go for. And it's fine one time around. It is. I like the first Beverly Hills Cop for what it is. It has the most cohesive story of Axel having to go out and solve this crime that he realizes is actually, like, originating from Beverly Hills and just so happened to trail into Detroit for some reason. It's weird, but it kind of works as a struggling setup. But, like, the second one, he has to do it again, and it's more of a bombastic action movie, because you can tell that the second movie was really very heavily influenced by Lethal Weapon at that point, which were bombastic action movies with comedy in them. So
I saw Beverly Hills Cop 2 before I saw Beverly Hills Cop 1 as a kid. So, like, I went into Beverly Hills Cop 1 expecting the same kind of comedy slapstickiness that I got in Beverly Hills Cop 2. And it was much more of a down-to-earth kind of cop movie.
Yeah.
With a little bit of buddy aspects, you know, the relationship between Axel and Billy, you know, Taggart being that, you know, that old cop that's seen it all and, like, you know, whatnot. I say old cop because I saw something on Instagram not that long ago that was like, you know, Taggart at 34 and then you at 34. And, like, boy, I wish I looked a lot better at 34 than Taggart did. Like, L.A. maybe is the wrong place for cops. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you look at when these movies came out, first one came out in 1984. Second one came out in 87. So same year. So they were whether or not they meant to be playing in the same field, they were playing in the same field. But people liked the idea that, you know, action and comedy, and they want more and bigger. So the two sides of the second movie are very enhanced and don't always blend well together, because you got the weird ha-ha comedy of it, and then suddenly Axel is just mowing down dudes in, like, a bombastic finale. Like, I think we've forgotten the cop part, because he's just a mass murderer now.
Yeah, it's almost, he comes in and almost is like the vigilante in, like, you know, someone else's backyard, right?
Yes.
Like, he's not bound by the rules of the Beverly Hills Police Department because he's not from there, but yet he still kind of tries to stick to the code of being a cop and the way he collects evidence and the way he tries to, like, interview people in his own, like, goofy kind of way, you know, but then at the end, like you said, he just, like, oh, bad guy, shoot.
Well,
gun go boom.
It kind of makes sense because it's a Tony Scott film and bombastic was what Tony Scott did. But still. And then the third one comes out in 1994, well after all the most of the Lethal Weapons and the Die Hards. And they say this one wasn't as good. Eddie Murphy has said on record. This one wasn't as good because we kind of rushed it and did it before we had a story. And you're sitting there going, you had 7 years, and then you rushed it into production? What were you guys thinking?
they rushed into production, but that was because they probably didn't have a plan in the first place, and they were just trying to get some money. Like, this feels like one of those early on paycheck grabs in a way. Like, I don't remember what Eddie Murphy's financial situation was at the time, but I know there was a period of time there where things were a little dicey for him. I don't know if it falls around this same time period, so maybe this was him trying to just, you know, get a quick buck to pay a lawyer bill or something. But, like, he to his credit, he did bring Axel onto the screen. Like, Eddie Murphy is Axel. He does a very good job playing that role, but he definitely... It was the weaker of all of his performances for this. And he doesn't feel like he phones it in at times, but he feels like he's not even taking the seriousness of what this movie is seriously. And it has elements of good, but overall, it is the worst of the three. It's fun, but it's kind of meh.
Well, that's an interesting point to make, is whether or not, like, where he was in his career and what things were doing. Because if you look at it, early in his career, he had 48 Hours in 1982. Which made $78 million on a $12 million budget, so really nice. Mm. Trading Places, which made $120 million on $15 million, which
great movie.
Huge. Great movie. And then Beverly Hills Cop comes out, and it makes $234 million on $13 million. So, like, upgrade to upgrade to upgrade. He's right. An A-list star now. That's huge. Golden Child comes out, actually does really well despite it, let's be honest, being kind of a shit movie. $194 million on maybe upwards of $24 million budget. Beverly Hills Cop 2 comes out, and almost $300 million on a $27 million budget. So again, A-list. Eddie Murphy's name sells. Mm-hmm. Eddie Murphy Raw comes out and makes $50 million for basically being a stand-up movie. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, just that's crazy. Wild.
Yeah. Coming to America, $288 million on $36 million. Again, not a great movie, but people like it. And Eddie Murphy's name sells the movie. Mm-hmm. But then, after that, that was probably also the last time that people were like, oh yeah, I want to go see Eddie Murphy because everything he does is good. Like, that's the kind of thing. Harlem Nights comes out and makes $60 million on a $30 million budget. Basically a flop.
Right.
And another 48 Hours comes out, $150 million on a $50 million budget, which for Eddie Murphy is not good enough.
Yeah, kind of weak. And, you know, to have, you know, some other people in that movie that are huge, I mean, that's...
So basically, leading up to Beverly Hills Cop, his career was, I wouldn't say it was flatlining, but it was middling out. And when you're at the A-list, like he was, being one of the few SNL members to actually host the show while he's on the show, for example, those kinds of things, you have to be like, okay, what can we do to get that goose we want to the career, you know? Yeah. And so Beverly Hills Cop 3 comes out for... $119 million made on a $70 million budget, and you're sitting there going, you did this clearly to try and goose your career, and I think at that point, everyone was on to you.
Yeah, and the numbers that strike me the most there as you were reading off was like, did you say $13 million to make Beverly Hills Cop 1? Like, the exorbitant amount of cost that goes into making films now
crazy,
is
right?
crazy compared to like, some of the great movies, like, didn't cost that much to make.
Well, and if you look at it, if they'd made Beverly Hills Cop 3 a decade later, so you want to Spike Lee, but, like, copper to, like, maybe $25 million. The 117 or $119 million it made at the box office for the third one wouldn't have been great in comparison to the first two, but it wouldn't have been considered a flop.
Right.
Instead, they spent way too much on a movie that really didn't need that much money spent on it, and it tanked. It was a massive bomb.
Yeah, it was not good. And a lot of that budget, I feel like, had to have gone into, like, whatever this theme park was supposed to be, because there was a lot of scenes in there, you know, in the park itself, and then a lot of the other ones that were, like, in the offices felt like they were shot in the back rooms. Like, it was just sterile walls, like a printer you got from, like, FedEx. You're printing counterfeit money on something that, like, I look like I can have at, like, my local, you know, like I said, FedEx Kinko's. Like, there's no serious thought put into, like, you know, the crime of this. There's just, like, you know, get an expensive venue, throw money at it, slap my name on it, it'll sell, and it just didn't.
Yeah, it just, gross. So big a waste of time. And it's interesting, because, like, you watch it, and you're sitting there going, okay, so where did the money for this movie go? Why did it specifically have to cost $70 million? Part of it, yeah, sure, Eddie Murphy's paycheck, but clearly, like, he wasn't worth as much as maybe people thought he should have been at that point. But, like, a lot of it probably just was the expense of filming at Universal Studios for the story. The stunt where he's climbing the Ferris wheel and, like, right. The big chase through the park and everything, that couldn't have been cheap.
No, and it's like a lot of green screen in some aspects mm-hmm. with that Ferris wheel, but that was a pretty big piece of hunkin' metal there that they had to at least mm-hmm. get, you know, rent for a day that would not have been cheap. And, you know, maybe it was a reused set from Wally World with, you know, Chevy Chase Vacation movies or something. Like, I don't know. But, like, it definitely, the budget went to places where
it didn't need to. Didn't
add to the movie. Like, no. You brought back, you know, Balky selling this funky gun at the end that had, you know.
He's always tacked on.
Yeah, maybe it was the gun that was expensive. It's this thing that had, like, photons on it or whatever. Like, I don't even know. But, like, the movie, I don't know. It had good moments of Axel, and anytime you get Judge Reinhold and him together, it's funny.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, I'm very into the thought of watching Axel Foley, and I'm going to watch him. We're going to talk about it because, you know, I see Judge Reinhold come back. I see they bring back Taggart. Like, that gets me excited. I like Taggart as a character. So, like, I think that you've seen it. I'm hopeful. Just, should I? Is, I guess, what I'm getting at.
See the new one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, It is actually pretty good. I would hold it up as a better story than Beverly Hills Cop 2, but not as strong as the original Beverly Hills Cop, because it's hard to compete with that. But they do enough in there that's pretty good. Like, pairing him up with his daughter feels very much like more of a Die Hard kind of scenario, like the later Die Hards.
Sure.
Having him work with them, having him, like, once again back in the saddle at Beverly Hills, at least for a compelling reason, is pretty good. They bring a bunch of the guys back, and you're like, wow, everyone here other than Eddie Murphy looks really old.
But, he looks the same, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Like, he's clearly a little thicker. That's about the only difference. But they do a lot of really good stuff in the movie as well. They pair him up with a new cop character played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And I'm going to tell you this right now, which I also said in my review on the website. He showed up for clearly a different kind of movie, because everyone else is there to make a Beverly Hills Cop movie. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt showed up to fucking act.
That's a guy, like, that guy. I mean, how far have you come from Third Rock from the Sun, little kid with long hair, teenage heartthrob,
right?
Maybe? Like, this dude is a quality actor.
Quality, yeah.
He's very good and does not necessarily get the credit he deserves a lot, because I can't think of, like, a real big, like, leading role for this guy. Like, he was in Looper, which was pretty, or the one where he Bruce Willis and him, the back, I think it was Looper, where he was in a few, obviously in Inception and in a few other things along with, but he was in you know, the most recent, not most recent, but the final of the Christian Bale Batmans he was in.
Yeah.
So he has some really good roles that he does, and he, to your point, he brings it in a lot of areas. Mm-hmm. So seeing him come to, I'm excited for this a little bit more now, because you know what you're going to get with Eddie Murphy, you know. And I saw Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in it, and I'm like, oh, how'd that go? He's playing a cop again. That's kind of what he's doing now. To hear that him put on a really good performance, I like him, because I like him as an actor, and I don't think he gets a lot of the credit he deserves in areas.
And the movie has the Axel F theme, which you have to have.
Very much so, yeah.
That musician, Harold Faltermeyer, he did Axel F, and then, like, the next year he did the Fletch theme. Mm-hmm. And you're just sitting there going, oh, man, that particular 80s style of synth that you just got in that moment and was so iconic.
Yeah. I just recently saw another, like, you know, social media, you know, everybody's lives now, TikTok, Instagram, what have you. Someone put the theme of the Axel, like, dun, 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 to the Predator doing the arm thing as Arnold's looking at it getting ready to blow up. Like, it was so perfectly done. I was like, that little beat there, that little 8-second beat goes with so many things. And, like, to see Predator do it, I was dying. It was hilarious.
So good. Yeah, it is an iconic song, even better than Fletch's, honestly. It's just so good.
Yeah. There's certain beats and songs, like, you just hear them and you're like, yeah, let's go. And, like, that's one of them.
Anyway, we will revisit this once you've seen Beverly Hills Cop 4, and we can specifically talk about that movie. I might also, because I haven't watched it yet myself, I might get you to sit down and watch the Beverly Hills Cop TV pilot they did.
Okay.
In the mid-2010s, because that was a different take where he was coming in to help out his son working in the Beverly Hills Police Department for an episode, and I heard it tested well but didn't get picked up, So I'm kind of curious how that one plays out, and then we can do a couple casts for those while we're at it.
That sounds fun, yeah, man.
Little watch party. Alright, well, this has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, waiting for our case to take us to Beverly Hills. I'm Mike Finkelstein.
And your buddy Mike the Ghoul gonna go put in his application over at the amusement park and get in on that counterfeiting.
Uncle Wally!
Let's go!
We'll go! And we will see you all next time!